Okay, hello everybody. I would like to talk. Okay, it's well, in, after all these talks and after all this, you know, citation of this 0.6, it would be reasonable to suggest that I will talk about this 0.6 and suppression of the inelastic process in Fermi gases. But I decided to go ahead and report on my recent work that I did, being already employed at ITEM and at Harvard-MIT Center for Ultra-Cold Atoms. And I will talk about basically two and three body problem near a narrow Feshbach resonance. And the main point here is the word narrow here. So I will spend some time, introduction. I will explain what are length and energy scales. By all means. Okay. Yeah, by the way, it's okay. And then I as a means of increasing scattering length, I will consider Feshbach resonances, and I will try to, you know, to basically repeat what Eric said 2 days ago. When is the width important? And also I have to tell you some ideas about, well, how to answer this question. Can a short-range potential look like a long-range one? We'll consider two-body bound states, and then I will go to the main part of the talk, which is three-body physics. And here I will not consider, but I will consider three bodies in symmetric state, so without Pauli exclusion principle. This can be identical, three identical bosons, or three different components of, for example, lithium-6, or Bose-Fermi mixture, so basically two bosons, one fermion, or two fermions in the different states and one boson. So I think it will be relevant, you know, for people who want to study mixtures and Feshbach resonances in this. Okay. So the smallest length scale that I will use is the size of the atom. Basically, this range, effective range, is determined by the tail of the van der Waals potential. And it should be compared with the de Broglie wavelength of particles, which is huge, which is of the order of 1,000 angstrom in ultra-cold gases. So the comparison between these two quantities gives us the gaseous parameter. Re times k is much smaller than 1. And this is what we call ultra-cold limit. In this case, also, we can neglect all higher angular momentum collisions and consider only S-wave scattering. All other high angular momentum just suppressed by centrifugal barrier. Okay, but this doesn't mean that the gas is weak. This doesn't mean that the gas is weakly interacting. The relevant parameter here is the scattering length, which can be tuned, and it can be much larger than Re first, and it can be even comparable with the de Broglie wavelengths or larger. So according to this, we call the situation when Ak is much smaller than 1 as weakly interacting gas, and when Ak is comparable to 1 or larger, we call it strongly interacting gas. However, well, as we already started to guess that near a narrow resonance, the scattering length is not the only important parameter. And now we'll consider a general case of resonance at a quasi-stationary level. So this is just Breit-Wigner problem when you have a molecular level here, denoted by this red dashed line. So if the tunneling here is infinitely small, then you have a molecular level. But if you open it a little bit, so you allow particles to tunnel, then this level has a finite time of disintegration, which is pretty long. That's why it's called quasi-stationary. So if particles experience this potential and they collide, and the collision energy is equal or in the vicinity of this quasi-stationary, the energy of the quasi-stationary state, then this is called resonance. basically the same physics holds for a Feshbach resonance, where the only difference is that instead of tunneling, you have a weak coupling between these two channels, but the same physics holds. And I would like to mention also the so-called optically induced Feshbach resonance, when you can couple the incoming particles by light to a bound state in electronically excited potential. This is one color transition. This means of modifying scattering lengths was predicted was proposed by Fedichev and Jora and York in 1996. Also Kagan was the author, right? Okay, so this one color thing is very bad because you could not come too close to the resonance because there is a spontaneous emission. And what
is not bad, it is uneven.
So yes. So it's not. That's right. So as an example, I would also consider the two color process well known in photo association. The business, PA business. And I didn't actually find where it was actually proposed as a means how to change scattering lengths. But surprisingly, S matrices was obtained in 1999 by John Bonn and Paul Julien. So you know the scattering amplitude. Why I mentioned this thing, because I asked many people here and they say, no, this is difficult. To do this is very difficult. Why I do this is that because this resonance, the width of this resonance is not tunable because it's fixed by hyperfine interactions. But the width of that one is related to probably is proportional to the Rabi frequencies, so of lasers. And this means that this resonance is potentially more you can change scattering lengths and the width of the resonance. Okay, I will describe all these three things in terms of scattering amplitude. And it can be shown that the scattering amplitude has exactly the same form in all of these three cases. If I denote this parameter as resonant energy, then collision energy, which is h bar squared k squared divided by 2 times reduced mass, and gamma is related to the tunneling amplitude. Basically, gamma is squared of tunneling because you have to tunnel here and back. And the scattering amplitude is given by the width gamma divided by this resonant part, the detuning basically, and this comes from the lifetime. Basically, square root of E density of states here, proportional to square root of E. Okay, this formula is valid in
gamma and square root of E.
Oh, this gives length. So gamma is the. Wait a moment, okay? Just wait a moment. I will. This formula is valid when in the ultracold limit, when k is much smaller than the inverse range of the potential. And I also neglected the background scattering amplitude here because I will only work with scattering amplitude close to resonance. So scattering amplitude should be larger than background value, which is, by the way, of the order of the range of the potential. So related to your question, I personally don't like these notations, and I rewrite it in lengths scales. Okay, so this is exactly equivalent to this one. I just introduced scattering lengths which is indeed scattering length in the sense that if energy is close to zero, or basically zero, then it's minus A. And R star is related to the width of the resonance. And all my talk will be, you know, about this R star. So if I denote this thing as 1 over A tilde and call this A tilde as the energy-dependent scattering length, if you allow me this jargon expression, then this scattering length has this form and looks like this. Note that this is somewhat different. I plot here in somewhat different units because usually people plot it as a function of magnetic field, and this plot will go in, will transfer to that the old one. If I fix E at zero value and change resonant energy by changing magnetic field, so basically this guy is proportional to the magnetic field. Okay. Now, if I forget about whether I have two-channel problem, Breit-Wigner type of thing, or optical, this two-color photo, two-color, sorry, two-color coupling, I know only the scattering amplitude. And I know that my momenta should be smaller than inverse Re. And this is all information that I need to describe this potential. So I say that suppose that we have the black box of the range Re, and with knobs, you know, I can change, for example, I can change R star and A. And now if I multiply this A tilde by K and compare it with unity, I can answer the question whether my guess is strongly interacting or weakly interacting. So consider the case when A is infinite. So with the magnetic field, we are just on top of the resonance. Then, if I look at this formula, then scattering length, A tilde, will be proportional to 1 over R star K squared. This guy goes away. So it will be inversely proportional to the tuning. And A tilde times K is R star K to the power of minus 1. That means that if I send particles here with momentum much smaller than 1 over R star, then the interaction is resonant. Scattering length is much larger than 1 over K. And if particles have larger momentum, larger than 1 over R star, or actually of the order of R star, then this thing is off-resonant. This reminds me of the well-known phenomenon which is called Ranzauer effect. It happens when electron scattering by atoms. And the physical picture there is that at momenta of the order of inverse range of the potential, there is strong dependence on momentum of electrons. And here is the same. But the only difference is that now we can define this R star as a new effective range because the momentum dependence is really related to 1 over R star. It has nothing to do with Re. And basically, we can define this new effective range as R star. And strictly speaking, if a collisional physicist looks at this formula, he just immediately says that your effective range is minus 2 R star because by definition, it should be minus R naught divided by 2 k squared. However, this case is somewhat different because the next term that would be like k to the 4 is multiplied by Re rather than R star. And we're interested in the situation when this new range is much larger than the old range. And this is what I call narrow resonances. Okay, so what is R star in reality? This is the formula. So it is inversely proportional to the reduced mass, background scattering length, the difference in magnetic moments of the atomic and molecular level, and the width of the resonance. And here, basically, in this table, you have to look at this red. What is it? coulombs here. This is fermionic lithium, and this is the this narrow Feshbach resonance that Randy was talking about. But I thought that the width is 0.1. I'm sorry, but anyway, the R star that we get in this case is of the order of 2 micron. So it's incredible. So it's almost macroscopic. And personally, among these bosons, I like the sodium, this one, although it has the smallest R star. The thing is that it is pretty wide. Technically you can address it. The width of the resonance is 1 Gauss. And I learned also about this cesium resonance that Rudy is using. But I ruled it out at first because the width is 5 milligauss. I thought that it's impossible, but Chen told me that it's possible because it's at low magnetic field. And also good thing is that at low magnetic field, the magnetic moment is not very high. So the general rule is, if you want to make R star bigger, then work with light particles, basically with lithium, with small background scattering lengths, with small magnetic moments, and of course with narrow resonances. And I would like to mention here also that in lithium 6 and lithium 7, so that private communication with Christoph, they observed some pretty narrow resonances with large R star. R star will be large there.
What happens if the background scattering length is infinity? Sorry, zero.
Oh, but so then, as Eric told us, you know, if you multiply A background times delta B, this is well defined. So No. A background times delta, then delta B will be, how you define delta B is the scattering lengths at...
Just see?
You define delta B in the following way. What is the detuning at which scattering length equals to its background value? If background value is zero, then delta B that you define it this way is also infinite. You're saying about delta B. Yes, but this one is finite. This thing will be finite. So if you look at this, I think this is Santa Barbara consensus. You know?
A is biggest transparency.
Yes.
A is not background scattering.
Background scattering is not here at all, because I'm very close to the resonance.
What is
A tilde is what? Okay, that's what. A tilde is defined in this way. It's what stands here in the scattering amplitude. 1/A tilde is a function of E. And this is a good definition because. If you consider the Bethe-Pyles boundary condition, and the logarithmic derivative of the wave function here, you know, will be 1/A tilde, not 1/A, but 1/A tilde. It will depend on energy. Okay, so it will be interesting to study this long range forces. I mean this range in the context of many body physics, and I feel that we are going in this direction somehow. But first of all, I would like to scratch the surface, you know, and to consider three body, you know, physics near narrow Feshbach resonances. And I'm motivated by this beautiful experiment. This slide is obligatory, basically, this conference. So I'm not interested in this thing, two-component Fermi gases. I'm interested in this thing, when you have Bose gases here and you form molecules, or you have Bose-Fermi mixtures and you form Fermi molecules consisting of fermions and bosons. Also three-component Fermi gas, lithium-6 with three different hyperfine components is Okay, so I will not consider this dimer-dimer scattering. This is too tough. But I will talk about this three-body process: atom-dimer scattering mass and three-body recombination. Okay, before I go into dive into this three-body business, I would like to remind. Basically, I will repeat most of what Eric said 2 days ago. Okay, but I will call a level weakly bound if binding energy is smaller than h bar squared divided by 2 mu r e squared. Ultra cold energies, basically. And I will define inverse size of the bound state as kappa here. And this condition is more or less equivalent to the size of the bound state is much larger than Re, than the range, actual range of the potential. Now, nice thing about this formula, the scattering amplitude, and the book of Landau and Lifshitz is that you don't have to know anything about this coupled channels and all these things. If you look at this formula, the first thing that you learn is that the poles of the scattering amplitude gives you the energy of the bound state, solving the quadratic equation, I find the inverse size of the bound state in this form. And the residue at this pole gives you correctly normalized wave function of the bound state. Of course, this thing I can define only for r larger than the actual effective range. And actually, this black part of this wave function is normalized to 1. So if you integrate it from 0 to infinity, this will be 1. And this prefactor is smaller than 1 all the time. And it tells you what is the fraction of, you know, open channel or what is the amplitude to find particles outside this range of the potential. So the result is the following. That at small detunion, when A is much larger than R star, we get the size of the bound state is A, and particles spend most of the time in open channel. And there is a case of intermediate detuning, such that A is much larger than Re, but much smaller than R star. Here, the size of the weakly bound state is square root of R star A, which is really weakly bound by definition, by this definition, because it's much larger than Re. And you can show that surely energy is also will be much smaller than this guy. And calculating this thing, you see that it's much smaller than 1, which means that inconsistence with what Eric said is that actually the level is weakly bound, but particles spend most of the time in the closed channel, so inside the potential, basically. Okay, and I want to note here that both experiments at MIT on Feshbach resonance in sodium and the recent experiment by Gerhard Rempe on rubidium, even in the case of the widest resonance, they were not in this regime, because R star in their case is of the order of 300 angstrom. So they're at most at A of the order of R star or smaller. So basically this regime is for narrow resonance in bosons is more kind of explored. Okay, so three-body problem. I will consider the symmetric case. As I said, either these three particles are bosons, identical bosons, or in any case, they don't have any Pauli exclusion between them. So, although this problem was studied, you know, starting from 50s or even earlier, and actually the method that I will use belongs to Skornikov and Termer Tirasyan, and was developed in the end of 50s. But really clear understanding of what's going on was provided by Efimov in 1970. And when he discovered this Efimov state, basically. And what he found was the following thing. I'm sorry for oversimplifying this thing, but it looks like this. So if I consider only okay, this is a hyperradius. Hyperradius is the average distance between all three particles. All other coordinates are called hyperangles. And if I consider only hyperradial part of the wave function, then I will see that it satisfies a Schrödinger equation with an effective potential which scales as minus h bar squared divided by m rho squared. M is the mass of particles with some coefficient here, but the important thing is that it is negative. Okay, and what it means is that, well, first of all, it means that the motion in this potential is well known, and there is this phenomenon of a fall of a particle to the center in this potential. I will comment on this a little bit later. What is important for me, for my narrow resonance business, is to understand where does this energy come from. So it's important to say that this effective potential is not an actual potential between three particles. It just says that energy is distributed in such a way that kinetic energy goes, well, large kinetic energy goes to the motion along the hyperradius. So that's what is I tried to represent by this arrow. So basically, particles accelerate towards each other. And this energy comes from two-body interaction potential. So they decide to split, you know, because the total energy is conserved. And this is so important that I will probably repeat it again. So if I consider these two particles close together, within a distance of r, well, larger than Re a little bit, and the third particle is far away, then I will see that the total energy of the system is a sum of the collision energy in this pair, and the relative and the kinetic energy of relative motion of this particle with respect to this pair. And the solution of this problem tells us that the energy transfer from this degree of freedom to this one is huge. This thing can be of the order of h bar squared divided by m r e squared, which is huge, one millikelvin. And of course we understand that this is valid only when a is independent of energy. Well, Efimov didn't state this, but it's assumed. It's just a constant.
The background,
whatever you want, it's irrelevant here. Irrelevant. We are talking about distances like thousands of angstrom. Background scattering length is like from 50 to 100. Background scattering is the range of the potential, basically. Okay, so in our case, now we understand that what is counted in this two-body Fischbach resonance is the collision energy in pairs of particles, and this collision energy can strongly deviate from the resonant value from ERS from the previous slide. And what we can expect is that at some distances, at some hyperradii R star, rho of the order of R star and smaller, we simply become off-resonant. And that means the scattering length drops and all the Efimov effect just disappears. In fact, if you solve it self-consistently, then you see that 1 over rho squared attraction becomes a Coulomb-like attraction. So you can say, I mean, who cares? So this is also an attraction, but the difference is very important, because in this potential is very pathological. So wave function behaves; it has infinite number of nodes when it approaches origin, and it doesn't allow you to calculate the three body. It doesn't allow you to calculate the phase of this wave function, and therefore three body observables. And you have to introduce a three body parameter, which gives you basically the phase of the wave function. And you know, this is done by hand. This is a parameter of the theory. It's very difficult to calculate it ab initio. But in this case, when we have narrow resonance and we have Coulomb Coulomb is very nice. I know everything about wave functions in the Coulombic potential. So, in the case when A is much larger than R star, basically small detuning, this is depicted here. The three-body physics doesn't change, but basically three-body parameter, I can calculate three-body parameter based on this thing. And in the regime of intermediate detuning, A is much smaller than R star. Even the region where we have 1/ρ² attraction disappears. So the Zeffirmian physics disappears almost completely. And I remind you that this is the region where, well, more or less the region where experiments are done. So and the conclusion here is that three-body observables are determined uniquely by R star and A, which are both low-energy two-body observables. Okay, so this is a result of Atten-Dammer scattering length. The calculation is based on this integral equation of Skornikov and Termoli-Tarasyan, generalized to the case of narrow resonance. At small detunings, which is to the left on this side, this is Atten-Dammer scattering length divided by A as a function of R star divided by A. The resonance is here, to the minus infinity on this plot. So we nicely retrieve the periodic dependence of the scattering length on A, on Atten-Dammer scattering length on A, and in the regime of So and we can count the number of Yefimov states. Yefimov state appear each time you cross this resonance. So basically, here there are no Yefimov states because the attraction is too weak. Here there is one, and here are two, etc. Nice thing about this my calculation is that now I can calculate the scattering lengths at which a Yefimov state occurs. And also very good thing is that we can say something, we can calculate something analytically because we have small parameter here. And scattering, Atten-Dammer scattering length is minus 8/3 basically of the atomic scattering length. Okay. So three-body recombination. The rate of three-body recombination is proportional to density squared and the rate constant, was shown by Jora and Peter Fedichev that it should go like 8^4 with a certain coefficient. So initially this coefficient was found to be 4, but then a more refined technique showed that this coefficient is actually not universal, but it oscillates between 0 and something like this is the last slide. 68, 69, and it depends it's periodic and on logarithmic scale as a function of three-body parameter. So that's what we calculated. So on this side, which is small detuning, we get this oscillatory behavior. The maximum here is exactly at 68 or 69. It saturates to the minus infinity here. What I plot here is recombination rate constant divided by 8^4. And this is R star divided by A. The scatter points here is the experiment of Wolfgang, this 1999 experiment on the three-body recombination rate near Feshbach resonance. So we see that it's larger than this 68, the maximum value predicted by these people. And the reason is that MIT group works in the regime of basically intermediate detuning, where not only this formula is not valid, but also the coefficient is. The coefficient can be found analytically, and I know the second term also can do whatever basically, but it becomes but the important thing is that scales with 8^7.5 and I was pleasantly surprised that not only the kind of the absolute value coincides with experiments, but also the slope, the 7, which is the 7.5, is also quite good. So this point is very interesting. At scattering length 3.3 R star, you have no recombination to weakly bound state, which is very, I think, very promising for creating strongly interacting Bose gases, which are like metastable in the first approximation, you know, with respect to three-body recombination to weakly bound to weakly bound state. And as a summary, I have 4 points to make. Okay, narrow Fischbach resonances have features of long-range potentials, as I explained, you know, and two and three-body physics is fundamentally different in these two regimes of small and intermediate detuning. And in any of these cases, three-body observables are determined by A and R star. Both are two-body observables. You don't have to work with short-range three-body physics and to, you know, okay. In the case of a narrow resonance, the effective three-body attraction is weaker than in the case of a wide one. So you compare 1 over rho squared and 1 over rho, which means that, well, I didn't calculate, but I'm pretty sure that there is a suppression of the relaxation to Deba bound state due to simply the fact that particles, three particles less, well, interact, attract each other in the less extreme, in the, well, how to say, weaker. Yes. Thank you very much.
So let's start with discussions, questions.
Can you comment on whether there's any hope of generating some of these three-body bound states by sweeping magnetic fields?
Yeah. So, yes. Thank you for this question. Basically, if you prepare your atom molecule mixture at this place and you increase scattering length, so in this scale, you increase it, you go through this resonance, then if you are lucky enough, and if it doesn't, you know, if it does have some lifetime here, you know, then you can form this trimer state. And the important thing is that I think you can separate them by the Stern-Gerlach type of experiment, because all of them will have different magnetic moments. Dimers, atoms, and trimers.
Are they fermions or bosons?
Bosonic dimers?
No, the atom state.
Three, well, it depends on how many fermions you have in the trimer. But they will decay very, very fast, I think, because,
Hatima, this is a really beautiful calculation. I wonder whether you can comment on what's the range? If I have a many body system, what is the range of Fermi energy or density that I have to control in order to reach a very stable nuclei? Because you have constraints which related to the density also. So.
Well, can you please repeat the question?
Well, the question is that part. Since you have this dips in the free body recombination,
yes,
rate, at those places, the molecules would be. These three body states would be very stable.
No.
The molecules.
This is atomic. If you prepare an atomic Bose gas.
Yeah. Right.
Then, in the first approximation, well, basically, three body recombination. This state is decoupled from this one, because there is a degeneracy here. This guy has the same energy as this one, but they are decoupled. And that means that if you prepare an atomic sample, then at least in three-body collisions, you don't form molecules, weakly bound molecules.
Say the last thing again, please.
In an atomic gas, if you don't have molecules at all, you don't form them, basically.
Have you any idea whether, if you were to repeat the Cooper calculation for four particles rather than two, you'll get Yefimov states forming before the Cooper bound pairs?
You're talking about fermions, right? Well, two component fermion gas in the field Fermi C. And in principle, I can even write an equation for this, you know. But I'm not sure that I can calculate it. Yeah, so I see what you mean. Instead of green functions of ID of vacuum green functions, I include this field Fermi C green functions just for ideal Fermi gas. Yes. The nice question, but I mean I don't think I can do this.
For four fermions, do you have the Hemon states or not?
No.
Connie?
No. The question was about Yefimov state, well, the bound states of four.
No, I was asking about the analog of the Yefimov results in the problem.
Tony, there is an answer for a long time known. Yefimov effect exists only in three body systems, irrespective of whether you're dealing with fermions or bosons. It doesn't exist in four body systems, 10 body systems, whatever. It's only in three. And in only in three dimensions, not in two, not in four.
Dima, is this approach restricted to S-wave analysis, or does it also work for higher order resonances?
I was thinking about generalizing this thing for higher order resonances, but at present I see it as a very difficult task, actually. I can only say some qualitative things, not quantitative.
What about the lifetime of these weakly bound bosonic molecules? In the case of a white Feshbach resonance, I was telling all people that the increase of the scattering length makes them less stable, just opposite to the case of fermions. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
And what about narrow Feshbach resonance?
Narrow Feshbach resonance, if you fix, well, in the case of small detuning, the same thing holds. So the same. The relaxation rate scales in the same way with scattering length as in the case of wide resonances. The suppression factor comes, it's something like Re divided by R star to some power. This is because at small separations, small hyper radii wave function, instead of continuing oscillating and growing, it goes to a constant. This happens at distances of the order of R star. So scattering length dependence is the same, but there is a suppression which comes from Re divided by R star. And that's why I'm interested in tunable width, you know, then you can change R star, increase R star, and enjoy a long lifetime.
Yes,
possibly.
People are interested in getting lifetime on a reasonable level, let's say 0.1 second at least, 100 milliseconds. Is it realistic to talk about that? Because ozonic molecules consisting of ozonic atoms, so far have been observed to be very unstable.
Okay. So the answer to this question, I would like to make it short. But if I consider three particles, then in the case of wide resonance, they accelerate and the wave function grows like 1/ρ². Okay. When we have narrow resonance, at some point, basically, qualitatively, you can understand that at some point they become ideal gas in the volume of R star to the cube. And the wave function doesn't grow that much. But the quantitative answer to your question, I don't know. So there is some suppression, but if we are lucky to have this kind of thing that Randy has with deeply bound molecules with bosons, you know.
Very simple. Have these Yefimov state been seen at all?
No, it's
helium primes.
Are they observed?
Helium triangle.
No. Measured? Measured?
No, not Yefimov states. Some bound states have been found, but other Yefimov states?
Okay, I think that we should stop the discussion here. We thank again the speaker.